everyone. Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2025, and this is episode 455, which is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation about the 2025 film Superman, which is now in theaters. Today's guest is Cole Burgett. He is a graduate of Dallas Theological Seminary and the Moody Bible Institute. He teaches systematic theology and Bible exposition classes and writes extensively about theology and popular culture. Cole has written a film review for the Christian Research Journal, and his review is called Up, Up and Away, Again, a Review of Superman, and you can read it for free at equip.org. That's EQUIP.org. Cole, it's good to have you back on the podcast for another movie installment.
Always good to be here. Thank you.
Well, this time we are talking about the Superman movie, which is a restart, I guess, to the entire DC universe. It's been really superhero stuff has been dominated mostly by Marvel over the last decade or so. And so Superman, though, it's pretty iconic. It goes back quite a long time, and I think it's really recognizable to many generations. So maybe not everybody knows a lot about this character, but can you give us kind of a high overview of who Superman is?
Sure. To put it simply, Superman is the foundational superhero. He's the archetype from which the modern superhero genre really was born. He's not the first costumed crime fighter to appear in fiction, but he is the one who crystallized the genre into what we now sort of recognize as the superhero mythos. Before Superman, you had characters that are now referred to as proto-superheroes. So these would be the characters from the pulps, like Zorro, Doc Savage, The Shadow, The Phantom, Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers. These characters who operated, many of them outside the law, with very colorful personas, secret identities, a flair for justice, stuff like that. These characters, these proto-superheroes, laid the groundwork. But when Superman debuted in Action Comics number 1 back in 1938, something changed. The premise of Superman is pretty simple, and this is the story that I'm sure everybody sort of knows. He's an alien called Kal-El who is sent from the dying planet Krypton by his parents, rocketed to Earth as an infant. He lands in the American Midwest, where he's adopted by this, you know, kindly old farming couple, Jonathan and Martha Kent, who raise him with traditional values, humility, compassion, self-control, that sort of a thing. And as he matures, he discovers he has powers, superhuman strength, speed, flight, invulnerability, heat vision, all that stuff. But what defines him isn't what he can do, so much as it is what he chooses to do with that power. And that's where Superman sort of transcends genre and steps into the realm of what, you know, in literary studies might be called archetypes. He's part Moses, part Hercules, part Christ. Like, you know, like Moses, he's placed in a vessel as an infant, sent away from destruction. Like Hercules, he possesses incredible strength and faces these impossible challenges. And like Jesus, he's this, you know, figure who descends not to dominate, but to serve. He doesn't come to rule over humanity, but instead to live among us, to protect us, even when we don't really understand him. There's an archetype there. It's pulling from a very obvious and rich vein of mythology. Clark Kent, of course, what is often called the mild-mannered reporter for the Daily Planet, is his human disguise. But it's also a vital part of his identity. He's not pretending to be human. He was raised human. his moral compass was shaped by, you know, very real and earthy human love. So the tension that runs through the Superman stories about identity, which this new film does tap into, you know, what does it mean to be a man who belongs to two worlds, to have godlike powers but a human heart, that sort of a thing? That's the essence of Superman. Not power without limits, but power tempered by restraint. He's the character who could do anything and chooses to do what's right. That's the dramatic engine. He's the ideal, not because he's invincible, but because he's incorruptible. You know, he's the answer to the question, well, what if someone with ultimate power chose to be good? So for someone who's never engaged with the character, that's the basic premise. But I would say that also plays into why he endures. I mean, Superman isn't just another character, even though today we're saturated with superheroes. Superman often in his stories is sort of like maybe a cultural Rorschach test for our view of power and morality and that sort of a thing. Every generation reinterprets him, but the core always sort of remains the same.
So Superman is a character that's been around, I mean, it's 2025, for almost 100 years. And so what are some of the maybe defining moments in Superman's legacy, and what is keeping him relevant, because we're still telling his story or a version of his story almost 100 years after he was first created?
Yeah, the history of Superman is really sort of fascinating, because it's also the history of the American superhero. He's the foundation, like we said, the prototype, the character that turned comic books into a cultural force. And to understand his evolution, you really do have to look at the broad movements of comic book history. Now, for people who study this sort of thing, I know it's sort of a funny idea, right? People study comic books. Yeah, these movements in comic book history are often referred to as the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and the Modern Age. Because Superman's character has been reinterpreted and reshaped in each one. We'll just sort of go through them in that order. Then the Golden Age. So the Golden Age of comic books is generally considered the late 1930s, when Superman appears and sort of ushers in this new age of comic books, through about the mid-1950s. As we said, Superman debuted in Action Comics number one. It was not Superman number one. It was Action Comics number one, a title that still runs today, if you can believe it. Action Comics number one in 1938. He was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. At the time, he wasn't quite the cosmic powerhouse we think of today. He couldn't fly. He just jumped really, really far. He was more of a sort of a crusading social avenger. In those very early issues, Superman would tackle corrupt landlords, wife beaters, war profiteers. It was very grounded, like street level stuff. He was a kind of New Deal era folk hero, a fantasy of justice in a world that, you know, could feel deeply unjust. And in many ways, this was his most, I guess to use the word radical, this was his most radical phase. He wasn't fighting aliens yet. He was fighting us, or at least the worst of us. And that grounded focus helped him connect with readers who were trying to survive the Great Depression and World War II. Now, the Silver Age, which has become, there's sort of been in recent years, I would say, a rediscovery of the Silver Age and what it has done. Because this is some of the stuff that was used to be sort of laughed off as silly, but people have really gone back to that. And I would say that the new Superman film certainly has a great affinity for Silver Age era Superman. Basically, the Silver Age is going to run from the mid-1950s to the early 1970s. that transition from the 60s into the 70s. By the 50s, Superman had started to evolve. And of course, this is walking alongside the growing interest in science fiction. So this era of Superman is the era of kryptonite. It's the era of the Fortress of Solitude. It's the era of Bizarro, Brainiac, the Phantom Zone. The stories became fantastical, even bizarre by today's standards. They're real weird. You know, Superman as a lion, a baby, a giant ant. They were rich in imagination, and it had writers like Otto Binder and Mort Weisinger was the editor then, and they leaned into this very childlike sense of wonder. And so Superman became, you know, less of a social crusader and more of this godlike space dad, perfect, moral, even a little remote. But that version of Superman is crucial to the character's legacy because it really codified the mythology of the character. Krypton became a fully realized culture. The idea of Superman as the last son of a doomed civilization began to carry a kind of tragic weight. And that brings us up to the Bronze Age, which runs from the 1970s to around the mid-80s, mid-late 80s. The Bronze Age brought with it a shift toward more serious storytelling. This is where a lot of the comics of this era, you know, begin to get us to the modern age of comic books. So this is where you had creators like O'Neill, Bates, Elliot Magan. They began grounding Superman emotionally. He was still powerful, but his internal life started to matter more. We began to see stories that explored his alienation, his loneliness, his struggle with identity. And of course, this era also begins to grapple with larger questions of relevance, right? I mean, in a world with Vietnam and Watergate and this rising distrust in institutions, what does Superman represent? Is he too perfect? Is he too detached? These are all questions that writers would begin to wrestle with more directly in years to come. And this brings us up to the modern age of comics, which kicked off in about the mid-1980s. And I would say the biggest turning point in the character's recent history was the Man of Steel miniseries by John Byrne. DC had just completed what is called Crisis on Infinite Earths. This was a line-wide reboot, which was, you know, very new for its time in the comic book industry. And Byrne was brought in to quite literally reinvent Superman for a new generation. And his take on Superman was more human, less omniscient, if you will. Clark Kent became the real identity. Superman was the performance. Krypton was made very cold and sterile, emphasizing the emotional bond between Clark and Ma and Pa Kent, his human parents. And that shift made him more relatable, more grounded. And it's also around this time that Lex Luthor was reimagined as well, not as this sort of mad scientist, but this kind of corporate tycoon, a kind of dark mirror to the American dream. And this more modern Luthor is still the version we tend to see on screen. Then, of course, in the early 90s came The Death of Superman, which really was a cultural phenomenon. In this storyline, Superman fights a creature called Doomsday in this knockdown, drag-out brawl and dies saving the world. This is the storyline that you saw adapted in Zack Snyder's movies when Superman is killed fighting Doomsday. But it was front-page news in the 90s. People lined up at comic shops. And the story, of course, it's not great literature, but it cemented the idea that Superman still mattered to the public. He came back, of course, but not unchanged. That whole arc, his death, the rise of the so-called Superman in his absence, his resurrection, asked, you know, what a world without Superman would look like. And it made the case that we still need him. In the 2000s, you have writers like Jeff Johns and Grant Morrison who are offering up some of the more thoughtful takes on Superman. In particular, Morrison's All-Star Superman, which ran from 2005 to 2008, if I remember correctly, is often cited as one of the best Superman stories ever told. It's very strange. It's deeply mythic. It's poetic. It's one of the stories that clearly inspires this new film. And it's also deeply moving. It strips Superman down to his essence, a man who always finds a way to save someone even when he himself is dying. And then Jeff Johns, meanwhile, wrote definitive arcs like Brainiac and Secret Origin, which helped to reestablish a clear continuity and emotional center for the character. And then in more recent years, the Superman Rebirth run by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason has been pretty well received. It introduced Superman as a husband and a father, raising a son, John Kent, with Lois Lane. That gave the character a new dynamic, still an alien, still a hero, but also a family man trying to raise a child with the same values that he was raised with. It was a fairly elegant way to modernize Superman without losing what makes him timeless. There are some really big names in comics right now who've had goes at the character. Brian Michael Bendis is one of them, but Tomasi and Gleason's run has been well-received, but sort of unsung as far as the critical reviews go, and it's one of the runs I like the most. So as far as what keeps the character going through all of that, to answer that question, it's not just power fantasy. If that were the case, he'd have faded into the background by now. What keeps him going in the public imagination, I think, is largely his restraint, his moral clarity, the idea that someone with all the power in the world would rather serve than rule. That's still compelling to us. Especially in an age that is increasingly distrustful of power. Superman endures as a man who could be a god, but chooses not to be. So across the decades, Superman has been reinvented again and again, but whether he's this social crusader in the 30s or a struggling dad in the 2020s, the idea behind him stays the same. Strength, under control, power in the service of compassion, and that idea clearly still matters.
You won't want to miss out on this very special print edition of the Christian Research Journal that's coming up, which is a culmination of more than a couple of years of primary research into a Chinese cult called the Eastern Lightning Cult. And I noted before that about a decade ago, they had more than 4 million adherents worldwide. So this particular cult, known also as the Church of Almighty God, claims that a Chinese woman is the reincarnated Christ, who is literally Almighty God. Not only do they have theological heresies and they deny the orthodox doctrines of, for example, the Trinity, the bodily resurrection, and biblical authority, they also have engaged in some very troubling psychological intimidation and even physical assaults of folks. So you won't really want to miss on this in-depth deep dive on the Eastern Lightning Cult. And the way that you can get this 100-page print edition of the journal is to be a partner with the Christian Research Journal and the Christian Research Institute by making a donation. And for a thank you for your gift, you can receive this very special print issue. It's easy to do that. Go to equip.org and go to our donate page, and you can give us a partnering gift where you will get this 100-page deep dive into the expose of the Eastern Lightning Cult. Well, now back to my conversation about the new 2025 Superman film with Cole Burgett. Well, a few moments ago, you were talking about the various different ages of this character in comic book history. And one of the things you touched on was there was a series in which he dies and is resurrected. So there are some, you know, messianic connections when it comes to this character. And you talk about this in your article. So why do you think that those kinds of themes are there? And, you know, is that something that makes people fascinated with this character to have those kind of messianic thematic things that define Superman?
Yeah, it's a good question, because it's sort of obligatory at this point that I think any Christian who touches Superman in any sort of public capacity, they have to have like the obligatory messianic imagery or touch on it, something like that. But I really do think it's worth pointing out that the messianic connections when it comes to Superman's character is less about deliberate theology and more about cultural intuition. Superman was created by two Jewish immigrants in the 30s, and his story, you know, draws very deeply from that well of longing, and for justice, for deliverance, for someone to stand in the gap. That inevitably takes on messianic tones. He's sent by his father, Jor-El, from, you know, the heavens. He grows up in obscurity. He reveals his strength in a time of need. He suffers to protect others. But what's important in this particular discussion is that none of this feels like a forced allegory. A lot of times when you do a messianic story, it can come across as a forced allegory. And Superman's, very importantly, I don't think does. It resonates because it taps into the immoral imagination of Western culture, particularly American culture. Superman is a very American character. And that actually, some reviewers, critics have pointed out that that's probably why the new Superman film is not performing as well internationally as it is domestically, because Superman has always been such a thoroughly American character. And his story taps in to the moral imagination of the West, the moral imagination of America, which has been so profoundly shaped by the Christian story.
Do you think it's more American than Batman, where Gotham City is like New York?
Yes.
And it's his earthly parents being in Kansas, being like, you know, common folk?
It's a different kind. So the question of Batman and Superman is interesting here. I'm actually going to take this back to the proto-superheroes for just a second. Batman is the next evolution of a very particular flavor of proto-superhero. Batman is the next iteration of a character called the Shadow, of a character like the Phantom. Superman, he pulls from that well, but is going to have more in common with a Doc Savage or something like that. But there's another strand of proto-superhero that Batman is the fruition of. Now, why do I say that? Because what Batman is doing, I'm going to say it's a little more metropolitan. The kind of Batman story that Batman inhabits really isn't like the Superman story that Superman inhabits. If you're wanting to talk about it in the strands of, is it more American than Batman? I don't know if it's more American. I would certainly say it's a different flavor of American.
I mean, they're both right? American.
Yeah, I mean, Batman is this gritty sort of street level, in the city, urban, I guess, would be the better way to say it. It's very urban in its storytelling. And, you know, Batman is always stalking, you know, gangsters and stuff like that. Whereas Superman's story, it's just different. So it's a different flavor, I would say. It's a different facet of American mythology.
So I was wondering about the film itself. So, like, I don't really know that much about Superman as a comic book character. And then, of course, you know, seeing the Superman films I was exposed to was the Christopher Reeves version back in the day. And I guess, was that the 80s? And I want to find out more about the film, but first of all, like I always ask you, is this a movie that's appropriate for Christian audiences in particular?
I think there's nothing spiritually problematic or theologically suspect, you know, about the film. It's not preachy. It doesn't really gesture toward any religious system, and it's not trying to be a sermon in a cape. Now, there are some very, I would say, intentional, you know, political motifs throughout the film, and it's paid off in a very funny line towards the end of the movie. About the only thing conservatives and liberals can agree on. But it's not overtly preachy in the sense of, again, gesturing toward any one religious system. But it does do, I would say, what these kinds of stories are very good at, which is it lifts the moral imagination. It presents goodness as admirable. It suggests that self-restraint and compassion are more impressive than domination. And I would say that actually would make it potentially fruitful for conversation, for the Christian to see it and be able to have those conversations with others who see it. I think it's a film that teenagers could very comfortably see. I don't think there's anything in the film that would turn people off from that. Now, if the question is just, you know, taste, I think different people will get, you know, different mileage out of this movie because it's a very quirky film. But other than that, I mean, yeah, I think it's a film that Christians can see.
I'd really like you to unpack the film and, you know, what is going on. As I mentioned at the top of this podcast, it's going to be spoiler filled because when I saw it, first of all, I said, I don't know that much about superhero things in general. And I feel like I was dropped into the middle of this action. And then I'd like you to also tell our listeners a little bit of the backstory of how this film came to be with a new studio focusing on DC, just as we had studios focusing on Marvel, because there's so much that's going to be coming out. And I think that kind of informs what they've done or their emphasis here. And I just, as the person who doesn't know that much about superhero things, I was confused because it felt like it was introducing a whole bunch of different characters that I'm supposed to know about that I don't know who they are and putting them in these various different settings. And it didn't particularly answer who these people were. They just assumed some knowledge on my part, perhaps. But I really would like you to take your time to unpack this for people, because I think unless you're a comic book nerd or in that, you know, sphere, maybe the average person, Christian or not, going to it might not really know the full scope of this story and what the context of all these other characters are in the film.
Yeah. So we'll start by just saying this isn't an origin story, which is, you know, a smart move. Superman already exists in this world. This world being the world that Gunn is creating for this new era of DC films, which we'll talk about in just a minute. Anyway, Superman is established. People know who he is, but he's still figuring out how to be both Superman and Clark Kent, how to belong to two worlds and serve both. The broader story involves Lex Luthor, played by Nicholas Holt, as this, you know, very powerful tech mogul with deeply cynical views about humanity and power. There are threats to the world, of course, but the real drama of this story is centered on Superman's character. Who is Superman in a world that doesn't quite know what to do with someone who chooses to do good for its own sake? That's the tension that Gunn explores. And it sort of gives the film a surprising amount of depth. I said before that, I think I may have put this in the review, that it's sort of the most sincere film that Gunn has made, because it's not a story that's interested in power levels. So many people try to make Superman's story about that, and it sort of tries to mine drama from that sort of a thing. And this movie sort of establishes at the outset, Superman is the most powerful metahuman on the planet. That's it. It's stated right there at the beginning. It takes care of that. And it's more interested in what he chooses to do. You know, he chooses to do good for its own sake. And that sort of throws the world, because it's a very, I would say, you know, a lot of people would characterize the times in which we live as cynical. And there's some truth to that. I would say there's a lot of truth to that. And Superman is not a cynical character. He looks very naive to the rest of the world. And it mines a lot of its dramatic tension from that. Now, as far as these other characters that you've mentioned, this is what's maybe unique about Gunn's approach to this is, you know, he has built a sort of fully fleshed out world behind the scenes. And this is just viewers, not their first. I guess the first would technically be Creature Commandos, which is a TV show on HBO Max. But this is the first, you know, widely publicized film for popular, you know, popular audiences. This is their first introduction to that world that he's building. And that comes as a result of James Gunn and his producing partner, Peter Safran.
And is it because he was so successful with the Guardians Marvel films?
That was part of it. He also did a film for DC before he and Safran were brought on board. He did the film The Suicide Squad, not David Ayer's Suicide Squad, but The Suicide Squad, I think, in 2021. James Gunn did that movie. And it was a hit. I mean, the critics liked it. People liked it. It's very different. It's sort of James Gunn unhinged. It's actually very vulgar and crass and all of that. And that again, that's sort of what makes Superman as a movie even more interesting, at least to me, because it's gun restrained. We've seen what James Gunn and a rated R movie looks like. We've seen what James Gunn without with the shackles off. We've seen what he does. And this is James Gunn restrained, holding back, telling a different kind of story. And I think that's important. You know, Gunn has sort of built his career, Guardians of the Galaxy, The Suicide Squad. He's built his career in this superhero world, telling these stories about losers and misfits and these out of sorts people who don't belong. And here with this story, he's given the most recognizable superhero of all. If there is one character that belongs in the discussion of superheroes, it is Superman. And so the story that he tells is different from what he is usually telling. And, you know, this movie is sort of pulling double duty. It's a Superman film. But as I said, it's also the introduction to the broader DC universe, or what's being called the DC universe. And again, that's something that Gunn is spearheading. So Gunn is co-chairman and co-CEO of DC Studios. And under DC Studios, he co-produces and executive produces every film and television series under the DC Universe media franchise. And the DC Universe was sort of conceived as a kind of a reboot, if you will, of the what used to be called the DC EU, the DC Extended Universe. The DC Extended Universe, of course, is the spate of films that began with Man of Steel back in 2013 under Zack Snyder. It continued with 2016's, you know, Batman v Superman. And there were, I think, something like 12 or 13 other movies that came out in that time that all sort of shared continuity with what was going on in the DCEU. So the Wonder Woman movies, Justice League, Aquaman, those films, the Shazam movies, those were all part of the DCEU. Even James Gunn's The Suicide Squad was part of the DCEU. But then once he was brought in to sort of spearhead DC Studios and you know, reconfigure everything, all of that has sort of changed. And it's sort of obvious to see, you know, Henry Cavill is no longer Superman. It's now David Corenswet. And even though Matt Reeves is doing his Batman stuff, that is separate from the Batman that will be introduced to the DCU and stuff like that. So that's sort of why there is a very wonky in the last, you know, 10 years, we've had Superman movies, but they're different kinds of Superman movies and it's a different actor. And now we've got this one and it's a completely new sort of thing that's creating a new world that's fully realized. And, you know, audiences are just sort of coming into it. To describe it the way that, one of my filmmaker friends did who saw it, he said, "This is the first time I've really seen a movie start with an opening crawl since Star Wars." And we laughed about that. But he's right. There's sort of a, there's a need to introduce the world that has been established in this film for audiences. And so when this movie begins, there's a little bit of a crawl, this, you know, these words that appear on the screen that orient you to this version of the world that Gunn has created. And it's very much a comic booky in this way, in that the world he has created is, it's like ours, but it's not quite ours. It's different. It's a world with, you know, fantastical technology. It's a world where, you know, these superhero characters called metahumans have been around for several hundred years. So it's very much its own self-contained world that is similar to ours, but is actually quite different. And it requires that sort of introduction for audiences at the beginning.
You just used the word comic booky, and also in your article, which, as opposed to like the movies, the exposition we find out about superheroes in all the movies that we've watched, especially if people are into the Marvel series, no matter what character, it's just like it's movie after movie about the same character, like Thor, for example. But in your article, you describe Superman, this particular iteration of it, as a Saturday morning cartoon brought to life. And you just used the word comic booky, which seems more cartoony to me. Can you unpack what sets this film apart from all the other superhero movies that we've seen in recent years, especially in the Marvel universe?
Yeah, this is one of the most distinctive aspects of Gunn's Superman, and I can't take singular credit for that. I actually think a lot of reviewers made this connection. They talked about it as if it's a Saturday morning cartoon. And it's one of the things that certainly makes the film stand out. Back, I want to say in June, the link is in the review, in an interview with Entertainment Weekly, Gunn directly cited the Super Friends cartoon. Super Friends was an old cartoon of DC characters that had Superman, Batman, and others in it that ran from the 70s to the 80s. And he directly cited Super Friends as one of the foundational influences on his vision for the movie. He said, I grew up reading DC and Marvel comics and having worlds and universes of superheroes who were interacting. I grew up watching Super Friends on Saturday mornings. And you really feel that, I think, in the DNA of the film, not in a campy or nostalgic way, but in the spirit of how the world is built. And this, you know, sort of goes to your point about it's there's all these characters and there's all these superheroes and they're all very colorful and they're all interacting in this movie. And that's sort of, I think, what everyone is picking up on when they say, you know, a Saturday morning cartoon feel. It's less about aesthetic. I mean, it looks great. There was a huge budget attached to this movie. It doesn't look like a cartoon in the sense that it looks cheap. But it's more about tone and world-building logic. This version of the DC Universe isn't interested in, you know, gritty realism. This is not Nolan's Batman. It's not interested in origin story realism. It starts from the assumption that superheroes exist and that the audience is okay with that. So you have Green Lantern in this film. You have Hawkgirl in this film. You don't get three acts of backstory for each one. They're just there, and it's not a big deal. That's very much how Super Friends operated. You'd turn on the TV, and Superman was flying around with Aquaman and Batman and Wonder Woman, and nobody paused to ask, wait, how does this work? It wasn't about plausibility. It was about possibility in that sense. So James Gunn embraces that logic, that particular kind of logic. A big, colorful world of superpowered beings operating on some understood but unspoken rules. And he does it without irony. That's the key. This isn't a meta, tongue-in-cheek take on superheroes. It's not trying to be The Boys or even Peacemaker, and Peacemaker is a James Gunn show. It's earnest. There's a sincerity here that almost feels a little countercultural to the superhero, to the culture that has grown up around the superhero movies that Gunn himself helped to institute, especially in a genre that has gotten so self-conscious and self-aware. And that sincerity is part of what makes the film feel almost retro, in the best sense, not in a visual design sense necessarily, but in its clarity, its moral clarity. The other piece of the Saturday morning cartoon comparison is that the film embraces the idea of good versus evil without apology. It's not simplistic. Lex Luthor, for example, is complex and philosophically challenging, but it also isn't bogged down in ambiguity. Superman is good, not because he's perfect, but because he chooses to be. And that kind of clarity is something that kids' cartoons used to lean into apologetically. Gunn revives that, but for an adult audience and with a little more nuance. And I mentioned this a second ago. I think what makes this especially notable is that James Gunn is one of the people responsible for saturating the superhero landscape. Guardians of the Galaxy, The Suicide Squad, Peacemaker. Those projects are funny, they're chaotic, they're self-aware. They helped define the era of the postmodern quippy superhero. So the fact that he is the one, and you know, he's producer, writer, director of this film. I mean, so of all the big, you know, creative decision makers, that's all three in one. So the fact that he's the one dialing back the tone and delivering something this sincere, I think is sort of meaningful. It feels like an intentional counterpoint. Gunn's Superman isn't interested in trying to outdo Marvel. It isn't interested in trying to outdo the DCEU previously. It's not even trying to comment on the genre. It's just trying to be a good superhero story. It's trying to be a good Superman story. And that's what makes it stand out. At a time when so many superhero films feel like they're either dragging themselves toward this, you know, gritty deconstruction, or desperately trying to juggle the building blocks of what we're now calling a multiverse. Superman just tells a story about a man who chooses to be good and builds a world of superheroes around him that makes space for his choice to matter. And so in that sense, I would say the Saturday morning cartoon energy isn't nostalgia. As far as superhero movies go, it's a bit of a reset. It sort of is very happy to remind us what these stories used to be about and suggest that they can be that again.
That's really interesting, that just in its uniqueness in that way, I guess I would say. Now, you started talking about just James Gunn, everything. He's the person all rolled into one, writer, director, producer. Was there any other kind of controversy in the making of this film or bringing the studio to life that was kind of surrounding what's happening now with his studio and DC Reset and all that kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah. Gunn has, he has a bit of, let's call it a complicated public persona. Years ago, he was temporarily fired from Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy over some old tweets that resurfaced. Now these tweets were offensive, and I would say they were clearly meant to be seen as shock humor. At the time, he was affiliated with a studio, if I remember this correctly, at the time that he made those tweets, he was affiliated with a studio that sort of specialized in that sort of, you know, shock offensiveness type thing. He, you know, made the necessary mea culpas and was later reinstated and did the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie. More recently, as he's taken the reins of DC Studios, there's been some pushback from online communities in particular. I mean, everything's pushback from online communities today, but they distrust his moral views, or they dislike the tone of his previous work. And you know what? I would say not liking the tone of his previous work is fair. I enjoyed Superman. I have never been the biggest admirer of James Gunn's work because it is so meta. It is so self-aware. It's so ironic. And I always found that to be quite eye-roll inducing, right? I always sort of interpreted that, and I usually interpret work like that, to be a, and maybe this is me being a little harsh, but this is just how I see it because we're so saturated with it today. I see it as a very lazy excuse to tell a good story.
He's being accused of being preachy in this film. Would you say that those accusations are correct, or people are missing the mark on what the film?
Well, I think that it's part of this conversation of his approach to tone and things like that. This film is sincere, and as a result of that, I don't think it's a light switch, is my point. I don't think it's one or the other. It's a sincere film, but it's still James Gunn making it. There are still going to be traces of that quirky, offbeat humor that's in there. And one of the big things that has come out about this film, and this is the whole, you know, where they say that this might be a little preachy with the political issues, is before the movie came out, Gunn made some comments to a reviewer about how, you know, Superman is an immigrant. And obviously that is a very, you know, controversial topic today. Now, I, for one, for the life of me, I can't get my mind around that statement being controversial, because if you know Superman's origin story, it's It's like, yeah, okay, I guess if you want to say it that way, sure. that's exactly what happens. But of course, given the current political climate in this country and the current issues surrounding it, that surges to the fore. And you know, maybe Gunn should have kept his mouth shut about it. But suddenly this kicks off this firestorm online, and there are people who, you know, previously played Superman who were like, you know, why are we making this a political thing, and so on and so forth. And in the story, there is a in the story of the film, there is a I don't even know if you want to call it the subplot, because it's not really a subplot. It's part of the plot of the movie. There's this one nation that is invading another, and Superman, you know, sort of goes flying in to stop this. And without really thinking about the political fallout or the ramifications of that or anything of the sort. Now, on a very surface level, you know, if you can look at that and go, oh, this is a very political movie, and it's a very preachy movie, and it's very, you know, Gunn's trying to make some type of political statement. Okay, well, by the time it's all over with, Lex Luthor has manufactured all of this stuff. This is all his doing. You know, this is not some gritty documentary style film about, well, what would happen if there was a Superman who flew to Ukraine or who flew to Gaza or something like that. It certainly draws from real world happenings, but it doesn't necessarily, I didn't watch the movie and go, I feel as though I am being preached at. If there's anything that is preachy in the movie, it is Superman's desire for goodness, for, you know, it no matter what's going on, you know, kind of like this is his conversation with Lois early in the film, you know, at the end of the day, people were going to die. You know, why did you fly over there and not think about, you know, the ramifications? Why did you do this? Did you check with, you know, the necessary powers that be? No, I just did it. Why? Because people were going to die. That kind of self-sacrifice, if that's what's preachy about the movie, so be it. I don't necessarily understand why someone would have a problem with that. But I'm sure that there are people who are, you know, looking very, very deeply into this sort of thing. And, you know, because of Gunn's comments about it, you know, even other actors were being asked about this at their premieres, other actors in the movie. And I, you know, think what you want of Nathan Fillion, but I thought his response was fairly telling, because he was asked pretty directly about this, you know, what do you think about these comments and all of that stuff? And he just sort of rolls his eyes and says, it's a movie, guys, and keeps walking. And right. I think that's probably how most people look at this, right? It's just a movie. Yeah, it's got, you know, a little bit of real world influence in there to flavor it, to ground it in the here and now. But other than that, I mean, you're talking about a movie with people who wear very colorful costumes, fly around and fight geniuses who orchestrate wars and also open, you know, portals to pocket dimensions. It's just, you know, you have to be very careful when trying to make this stuff matter more than it does.
And also, just, I don't know if people know that much, you know, if they're just thinking about historical context, when this character was invented, it was right during the time leading up to World War II. So they were already in, you know, that could be part of the warp and woof of some of the things that have been a part of this in the background. And I don't know if any of the comic book writers are thinking about that in particular over the almost 100 years. So, I mean, given that this superhero has been around for a long time, do you think it's endured because he has that goodness that was portrayed, that he is out there fighting crime for the people, et cetera, and he's an average, you know, he has this alter ego personality that's this, you know, salt of the earth guy that just is a newspaper reporter kind of thing? Is that what's been appealing over generations, because it was a character invented in the late 1930s?
Oh, absolutely. That's a huge part of the appeal. It's worth Having said all of that, I do want to say this. I can completely understand why conservative audience members would be understandably skeptical. I was skeptical of James Gunn doing Superman, especially given how caustic his other works can be. But having watched the film, I can say Superman really does feel like a different animal. It's not interested in snark or subversion.
It's much more family friendly than some of the
parties. It is. Gunn, and I'll just giving him credit where credit's due. Gunn seems to be writing here not as a provocateur. And all of his other work, even in some ways, Guardians of the Galaxy, it's very provocative. But this does feel as like someone who genuinely admires this character and wants others to admire him too. So, you know, credit where it's due. That's sort of the last I'll say about that. But as far as why the character endures, like you said, part of the warp and woof of these Superman stories from its inception has been that he grows alongside the modern world. I mean, this is just comic books in general. And, you know, this has created problems for comic book writers even, where it's fair to ask the question, why is it that after, you know, 80 years, Superman still looks like a 35-year-old dude? Does he not age? Why does Batman not age? That sort of a thing. And that has led to, you know, DC, you know, trying to explain it as multiverses and all that sort of stuff and the crisis events and all of that stuff. But all of that is done in service to the fact that these characters have grown and evolved throughout history. They have grown alongside the times. It's very like James Bond in the cinema landscape, where, you know, every Bond film is set in the time that it's made. When Roger Moore takes over for Sean Connery, it's not a reboot. It's not a relaunch. It's not a reset. It's just the new Bond. And comic books are very, very much sort of the same way. When a new creative team comes on and, you know, continuity is a very... It's something that we've only recently become obsessed with. Canon and continuity, making all the little pieces fit together. I actually think that stuff, while it's interesting in theory, I think it ties the hands of people creatively. It makes it very difficult for a new creative team to come onto a legacy character when you have to saddle them with 80 years worth of history that they may not care about. They may be a great storyteller with good ideas.
Do you think that's only because of the rise of the internet? In other words, before you would have had these forums where fans would unmask them and go into the comments section and start comment bombing a film's trailer or any kind of press that's been done about it. There was nothing to have that before where it's this appeasement of every single, you know, fan podcast out there with huge reach, etc.
Yep, you're exactly right. The rise of the internet and has changed the landscape. And I would say this doesn't just apply to comic books. It applies to any entertainment medium, film or anything like that. Any type of what is today called IP, intellectual property, you know, that'd be Superman, Batman, anything like that. Any type of IP today comes with a built-in audience. That's why these stories keep getting remade, because they're safe bets. It's not a new thing where you have to go find an audience for this character. You have to go find an audience for this story. You make a Superman movie, people are going to turn up. Even if it flops and gets horrible reviews, you're still going to make a lot of money at it because people know who Superman is and they want to go see a new Superman movie. That being said, there is a much greater pressure now on creatives to appease many people. I think you can actually see this in I want to be careful how I characterize this because Rian Johnson just gave an interview where he talked about this quite a bit. You can sort of see the desire to appease different parts of a broad fan base with the recent Star Wars films, which, many people have criticized, and you know, whether or not it's fair or not, it's a different story, but many people have criticized as being very herky-jerky and wishy-washy in what it set out to do. And a lot of people attribute that to, you know, fan backlash, that sort of a thing. And so there is that pressure on creatives to do this. But as for why Superman in particular endures beyond all of that, to your point, it's not that he's just relatable, but he's also something aspirational. We sort of live in a time that likes to flatten our heroes into reflections of our flaws because we think that makes them relatable. If you give us a flawed hero, we are supposed to find that relatable and therefore like him more. And so in this time that flattens our heroes, Superman still points upward. He doesn't mirror our brokenness back to us. Instead, he gives us a picture of what we might become if we learn to use, you know, strength with mercy. That idea never really goes out of style. And this is actually that concept is worth pointing out. I remember we've talked before. I'm a very big James Bond fan, and in many ways, you know, Bond was sort of my childhood hero type thing for better, for worse. But I grew up on the Bond films, and comic books like this, but Bond was sort of the cinematic, shadow, if you will. And Barbara Broccoli, who used to, be the person who ran the Bond movies alongside Michael Wilson. She once said, she was asked about Bond's appeal, and she once said in an interview, heroism will never go out of style. That is why Bond will never go away. There will always be a new Bond. There will always be a new Bond movie, even when it looks like there's a lull or whatever. Bond will always come back. And her response, her justification of that is because Bond is a hero, and heroism never goes out of style. That's sort of, I think, can be applied to Superman. That idea, the hero, never really goes out of style. Even if it feels countercultural now, maybe especially because it does, people still want to believe that goodness can be strong, that power can be restrained. I mean, don't they even say in the movie that, you know, maybe today, if you really want to be, you know, quote unquote punk rock, it's treated as a sort of a little gag in the movie, this punk rock idea, but you know, be kindness is real punk rock. And that, that can sound so sentimental, but it's delivered in the film in not a very sentimental way. That's what makes this kind of story difficult to tell. And that's what makes, you know, a Superman story difficult to tell. People are always complaining. I mean, I feel like all of my comic book friends are always complaining that no one can tell a Superman story. Superman just isn't compelling. He's not that interesting. Well, I don't know that he's not interesting. I just think it's difficult to tell a Superman story well because the subject matter of goodness makes it so easy to slip into sentimentality. And what you really have to do, and I think there's, you know, there are serious theological connections to this. What you really have to do is make goodness appealing and not sentimental. Goodness really is the harder choice. To wake up in the morning and to not give in to that cynical part of you, if you want to put it in theological terms, to get up in the morning and think about someone else other than yourself is actually the more difficult thing to do.
But that's not what our culture is doing. I mean, our culture, I'll point everybody back to, especially Star Wars fans, since he mentioned Star Wars and Rian Johnson, I'm going to point everyone back to the review that Cole did recently on the Andor series. It's like, it's got so many just accolades for its grittiness, for the grind of just trying to be against the Empire. But what it was trying to do is recast the good and evil story that from 1977 into something else that Star Wars hasn't been. And so, like you were saying, we're kind of far flung. And so people are like, well, where's the gritty kind of, you know, angst of Superman? that's culturally relevant.
Exactly. And this film, it just embraces something very different. And, you know, I will be the first one to stand up and say that I really was impressed with what Gunn was able to do with this material. I was one of the naysayers when I heard that he took over DC Studios, because I'm maybe a little biased here. As far as the comic books go, I've always been far more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy. I've read DC comics for years. I have, you know, this is telling on myself, but I actually have a subscription at a brick and mortar comic book shop. Yes, I'm a nerd. And DC, those titles are what I pull. And when I heard that Gunn had taken over DC Studios, I thought, you know, this is a really terrible decision. I think his movies are very vulgar. I think they're very caustic. I don't think he's the right pick, especially not for Superman. And I'm very happy to have seen the film and see the restraint that he put into that. So yeah, I think you're right. People still want to believe that goodness can be strong, that power can be restrained. This is what it comes down to, that someone might show up simply because it's the right thing to do. And that's why I think Superman lasts, and ultimately why we still need a character like Superman. It's why we still need heroes. I think Barbara Broccoli is very right about that. It's something that never goes out of fashion.
Well, there's a lot there for the Christian apologist to think about, especially the themes in this film. Although I do sense that, especially in the first Guardians of the Galaxy film, some of the more poignant parts of that, just in moments of that film, made its way into this film more fully fledged, I think, especially when you're thinking about, you know, origins and parents and things like that. But on a lighter note, I wanted to ask Cole, of all the various different incarnations of Superman on film, what are the films that you could recommend, or would you say skip all of them and start with this one?
That's a good question. I would say this is a good film to start with if you've never encountered Superman before. That being said, I have great affinity for the 1978 superhero film just called Superman the Movie, which was directed by Richard Donner and stars Christopher Reeve as Superman. If you've never seen that film, because it was such an important film in terms of movie history, if you have never seen the 1978 Superman, I would say that's definitely one to check out. You could check out that one, and then, of course, this one.
Well, thanks, Cole, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to episode 455 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest was Cole Burgett, and we were talking about the new film, Superman. Cole has written a film review for the Christian Research Journal. His review is called Up, Up and Away Again, a review of Superman, and you can read it for free without a paywall at equip.org.
You won't want to miss out on subscribing to the other podcasts from the Christian Research Institute. We have the Bible Answer Man podcast, which is published Monday through Friday with the best of the week on Saturday. It's hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and is available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. In addition, Hank has a podcast called Hank Unplugged. Hank takes you out of the studio and into his study to engage in free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. And you won't want to miss out on the brand new podcast from the Christian Research Journal. Christian Research Journal Reads presents audio versions of Christian Research Journal articles. It was a print incarnation of almost 45 years. It's now on the web, as you know, with new articles every single week. So you won't want to miss these audio articles of some of our most popular and most accessed articles on our website, equip.org.